Record.
The Men's and Women's Ashes starts on Friday. Watch the highlights on iPlayer. Listen live on BBC Sounds.
This is Radio 3. It's midday, time for Private Passions, and Michael Barclay's guest is Becky Speight.
Becky Speight has been the Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds since 2019. It's the UK's largest nature conservation charity, with over 1 million members, and manages more than 200 nature reserves, providing a home to at least 18,500 species. Becky began her work in the conservation sector when she joined the National Trust at the turn of the millennium. From 2014, she focused her energies on our trees and our woods when she became chief executive at the Woodland Trust. She said she moved on to the RSPB because she wanted to be where the really big fights are in terms of our natural world, and where she could make a difference to something she cares about deeply. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more about those fights and how you hope to make a difference. But we'll also hear music, Becky, by Elgar, Vaughan Williams, and the folk singer, Karine Polwart. Your first music, though, is Beethoven, and I wonder when you first came across it.
Well, I first came across it because there were two records in my father's collection that I was given access to as a kid. And they were those lovely kind of very hard, stiff kind of LPs. There was a Mozart, which was Symphony 40, and then there was this Beethoven. And I listened to both a lot. And I remember just how frightening the start of this symphony was, hearing it for the first time, but then just how wonderful the end of it is and how uplifting it is. So it kind of stuck with me much more than the Mozart, actually.
Well, we're going to hear a performance by the Britten Sinfonia, conducted by Thomas Addis, so that certainly wasn't the one you heard then, because this is quite a recent recording.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Thank you.
I love it. It's just, I think, because it goes, you know, that does that C minor to C major thing in that final movement. It's full of that kind of fierce joy, which I think Beethoven does particularly well. And I feel like if I could start every day with that playing in my head, off we go. It's just brilliant.
It has a galloping momentum.
Yeah, and a kind of real forward momentum as well. And I think that symphony for me embodies that outrage at the beginning and kind of horror of what's happening, and then that optimism at the end. And that's so important in my work and in my attitude to my work, because, you know, I have to hold both simultaneously in my head, really.
The end of Beethoven's Symphony No. 5, performed by the Britain Sinfonia, conducted by Thomas Addis. You grew up in Dorset, Becky Speight. Were you a budding ornithologist back then?
I was fascinated by the natural world, I think. And that was because of my parents. My mum loved wildflowers, so we would kind of go on walks and she would give all the wildflowers their common names and we would learn those. And then my father was very much into outdoor life, so lots of camping and going out in boats and fishing and that sort of thing. So that combination, I think, just gave me this feeling of being at home and enjoying the natural world, almost without realising it.
I think your name means woodpecker, doesn't it?
It does, it does. Yeah, yeah. In Middle English, it means woodpecker. And I think in modern German, it still means woodpecker as well. Yeah.
I was thinking as we were listening to the Beethoven, I always find it rather fascinating to hear a composer colleague conducting the classics.
Yes.
Because they tend to bring out slightly different little things, little idiosyncrasies.
Yes, yeah, I could see you really appreciating little moments in that as we were listening to it.
It's probably not unlike you observing creatures in the wild that you bring a certain expertise, so you recognise things which the rest of us might miss.
Yeah, and that's such a joy. I often talk to people who are just starting out in bird watching and kind of realising that they can identify the song of a bird or know the species they might see in a particular habitat like woodland or a wetland. It's really exciting. It just opens this whole world that you might not have realised was there.
How important was music to you when you were growing up?
It was a big part of my childhood. I learnt the piano and I learnt the clarinet. I kind of self-taught myself a bit of guitar. And then later on, when I was sort of in my late teenage years, I started singing more. So it was always there. And it was a combination of sometimes kind of not wanting to do my practice. I can remember the ticking metronome on the top of the piano and the alarm clock was set to how long I had to practice for. But also just loving it and loving making music with other people. I think that remains really important to me.
And were your parents encouraging not just in music, but also in your love of the outdoors?
Yes, but not in a very kind of directive way. It was just how we lived. So I've got a brother who's 18 months younger than me. There are just the two of us. When we went on holiday, we went camping. If we went out for the day, we went walking maybe along the Dorset coast. In the winter, we'd light a fire on a beach and cook some sausages. It was just how we were brought up, really.
This next track, I think, does remind you of a campsite.
It does, it does. I have a very clear memory of camping in the Channel Islands, which is where we often went on holiday. We were on Herm, which is a tiny one of the islands, in a very old-fashioned, heavy canvas, kind of big green tent. And I'd been out playing football with my brother with some Dutch friends we'd made on the campsite. And I blasted back into the tent, probably for a drink. And I can just remember very clearly hearing this piece of music, and I can remember the jade green of the canvas in front of my eyes as I heard it for the first time. And for years I didn't know what it was, and I finally, of course, discovered what it was. We persuaded my dad to buy a little kind of tape recorder that he would kind of play the greatest hits of the classics on. And I still can't quite listen to The Arrival of the Queen of Sheba without hearing the tape slowing down at the moment where it was slowed down. But yeah, it absolutely struck me and sort of transfixed me, and it still transfixes me now when I hear it.
Well, it's not the Queen of Sheba, but it's certainly a pearl, because it's the duet from Bizet's opera The Pearl Fishers. And isn't it interesting how when you hear a piece of music that really strikes you, some emotional or visual connotation, like the green canvas, forever becomes linked to it.
Yes, totally. And I didn't really go to opera until I was in my 20s. I had some friends in Edinburgh who took me, and again, it just opened a world to me, really.
It's a combination of a great tune, but also the two voices together.
It's awesomely beautiful. I defy anyone to hear this and not weep. I'll probably weep.
Une femme apparaît Ma souda, que l'étrange ardeur s'allume,
quel feu nouveau me consume.
Ta main repousse ma main. Dans nos cœurs, l'amour s'empare et nous change en ennemi.
The duet from Bizet's opera The Pearlfishers with the tenor John Ayler and the baritone Gillo Quillico and the Toulouse Capitol Orchestra conducted by Michel Plasson. Very interesting that what Bizet does there is something much loved by Mozart and Verdi, which is to start with the singers on a kind of monotone.
Yeah.
And you hear the tune in the orchestra. And that makes one want to hear them sing it, you know. So he holds back, really, and then pulls the trigger when they get it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so dramatically literate, isn't it, as a piece. And I can remember doing a jazz singing course and our teacher saying to us, in every jazz song, there's a note called the money note. And it's the note that people have paid to hear you hit or express. And I'm sure Bizet wasn't going for a money note, but he was going for a moment in that duet where you just kind of go, it's like a wave crashing. It's wonderful.
Talking of being literate, Becky, you studied English literature at Durham, didn't
yes.
you? You became a management consultant in London. But what made you change tack and decide you wanted to, as it were, make a difference?
I think it was just feeling, I mean, we spend a lot of our time at work in life, and I wanted to be doing something that I thought was really meaningful. And although I found management consultancy really exciting, it was very buzzy, and I learnt so much from the 5 years I did, I just felt I wanted to do something that contributed more to something I personally really believed in. And at that time, that was about what was happening both to our heritage, but also to the natural world. And that's what made me change, I think. And it was a big shift. Actually, going back to that Bizet, one of the things I love about that piece is it's about friendship. I live on my own now. I don't have a partner. I don't have children. But my friends are incredibly important to me. And I think my friends really encouraged me to do this leap.
One of your first jobs with the National Trust was running the Stourhead Estate in Wiltshire, a Palladian house, if I remember correctly, with a world-famous landscape garden.
Oh, wonderful garden.
That must have been quite a daunting job in some ways.
It was. I mean, I think they were crazy to take me on, really. I was very lucky. I had somebody who was willing to take a punt on me and think she knows nothing about what she's going to be doing, but I think she'll learn and I think she'll do a good job. And I did learn lots and lots doing that job and just fell in love with that place. It's still got a big place in my heart. When I go back to that garden in particular, it's a wonderful place.
But presumably the management consultation that you had been doing did actually help you in this kind of work.
Yes, I think it equipped me with the confidence to go into very different situations and get to grips with them quite quickly and to understand that it is the people that make all the difference in the end. You know, you've got to have people who understand what they're trying to achieve together and are prepared to put their backs into getting there.
And of course, that's really the key to making music too, isn't it? Whether it's singing or in an orchestra, it's a team effort. You've got to be able to listen to the person the other side of the
Absolutely.
Stage.
Absolutely. I've sung in lots of different sized choirs and choral societies. And even in the biggest choral society, a great conductor will say to you all, just listen to each other. And you get a different blend, you get a different sound. And it's hugely uplifting when you get to that wonderful moment. You're in the flow.
Your next piece reminds you, I think, of a trip you made to the States in 2012.
Yes. I was lucky enough to have 6 weeks when I went off to visit some of the national parks in the southwest corner of the state, which are amazing places like Yosemite and Zion. And I just travelled around camping. And it was a moment in time when I think my eyes just opened to what was going on in the natural world and the fact that I really wanted to make a difference in protecting what was there, but also restoring it.
This Fanfare for the Common Man by Aaron Copland that you've chosen, Becky, it's a kind of exclamation about humanity and life,
yes.
isn't it? It seems to me that it has a grandeur about it with which we should associate the joy of being alive.
Yes, absolutely. I love this piece. I think it's forever associated with the States in my mind because of the space programme, but it's also the Fanfare for the Common Man. And sometimes in Nottingham, I travel a lot by bus. We've got good public transport. I sit on the bus sometimes and I think, there's a fanfare for you, you know, and you hear about people's lives going on around you and you realise that everyone has got big things that they're trying to kind of either contend with or make happen in their lives. And I think this is their fanfare.
Thank you. Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, performed by the Los Angeles Philharmonic, conducted by Zubin Mehta. It summed up to me the idea of those massive trees in America.
Yeah.
The redwoods,
yes,
which you must have seen when you went to Yosemite.
Absolutely. You cannot believe how huge they are. It's almost impossible to photograph them because the scale, you know, is just so enormous. And I think it was that sense of scale and wildness. When you go to these American national parks, you know, there are honeypot centres where there's a bit of tourism and things like that going on, but it's so easy to get away from that. And I can just remember one night, I think in Zion National Park, being camped out under a cottonwood tree with my campfire, and then all of a sudden all the bats flying out of the tree as the sun went down. And just this sense of being in these enormous, much wilder spaces, it just kind of made me come back and be determined that that was the trajectory I wanted to take in terms of my contribution. The difference, and I think that piece is also about the difference an individual life can make.
You might have encountered a bear while you were camping out, and he'd have been very pleased to find a honeypot.
That's a very... Actually, I did see bears when I was there, and I had a very funny encounter with a bear. I was sharing a tiny tent with my brother at one point on this trip, and a bear did come right up to the outside of our tent, and he slept through it completely. He has never believed me, but he really did.
When you became CEO of the RSPB in 2019, you began with a rallying cry, let's knuckle down and make the difference we need to make together. If not now, then when? If not us, then who?
Yes. And that's a combination of two things, really. One is that we are in this crucial decade in terms of how the natural world has declined and been destroyed. And this is the moment when we have to turn it round, really, this decade. And that's been recognised by the UN globally, as well as here in the UK. So, you know, there's an urgency to what we have to do. And there's an urgency about how the natural world can help us combat things like climate change, too. So it is now that we have to do this.
And how do you assess the current situation for wild birds in the United Kingdom?
It's not good. The overall trajectories are ones of decline. I mean, we estimate that we've lost around about 38 million birds over the last 50 years, about a fifth of the breeding bird population. And some of our most common species, so the ones that we think are still all around us all the time, are really declining in abundance. So abundance really matters, as well as species going extinct, which is a real problem. We've got about 15% of species in the UK that have gone extinct. We've got about half in decline as well. And it's that lack of abundance that I really feel. This morning I woke up because I had my window open to the dawn chorus, and I lie there thinking, is that dawn chorus thinner than it used to be? And it is.
Well, let's hear a clip of one of your favourite birds, just to remind us of how precious it is. What have you chosen?
Oh, I've chosen a clip of a nightingale. I mean, it's been reflected in literature, in music down the years, because it is the most beautiful bird song. But we've lost half of our nightingales as breeding birds here in the UK. So it's a song that's disappearing. And it's just the most wonderful sound.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Can't get anything more musical than that.
No.
Last year, you teamed up with the National Trust and Wildlife Trust to challenge what you described as a government U-turn on protecting nature, warning that the RSPB might take to the streets. Is that really a mark of the strength of feeling that this generates?
I think people do really care about what's happening to our natural world. And I think people absolutely do want change, but it's a complex issue. And I think it's one of the things that the RSPB is good at, actually, is playing right across that whole agenda. So not only making sure that we look after important habitats and we stop species from going extinct and we do things to kind of create that abundance I talked about, but also that we're able to influence the government policy that will guide us in the right direction and help work alongside people like businesses, landowners, farmers, to make sure that we move in the right direction as well. And I think it's so important to play across that whole piece.
Is there a danger that in taking a political stance, the RSPB becomes a little out of step with some of its members?
I don't think we take a political stance in that we campaign for a particular political party, but I do think that we make our voice heard for nature in that political arena, and that's because we need the right policies in place to make this all possible.
I think the problem you face is much the same as many of us in the musical world face, which is how do you argue against money going to hospitals and NHS and children's education for the thing we believe in your case, birds and nature, in my case, music. And I don't know how you do actually balance that.
Well, I think it's increasingly obvious that having a healthy natural world, those ecosystems I talked about working, underpins our survival as a human species. So they underpin a successful economy, they underpin us having clean water, they underpin the air we breathe, they underpin the food we eat, providing pollinators and healthy soils. All of this is underpinned by a healthy natural world. So I think it's more about not only thinking in the short term, which of course politics tends to, but thinking in the longer term as well. That's so essential.
Now, you've brought something which is new to me, so I'm grateful for you. Tell me about it. It's A Lark in the Clear Air by Carine Polwart.
Yeah, so Carine Polwart is, I think, a marvellous musician. And this is called A Pocket of Wind Resistance, which was a performance piece that was all about the return of the geese every year to Fala Moor, just south of Edinburgh in Scotland. And it's made up of spoken word and music. And this is one of the pieces from it. And it's actually a poem that was written by Samuel Ferguson, an Irish poet. And it's been set to music and it's just lovely. La-dee-dum.
Lark in the Clear Air. Carine Polwart and Pippa Murphy's version of the folk song on their 2017 album, A Pocket of Wind Resistance. It had a very airy quality to it with that percussive backing.
Yes, yeah, lovely. And it does, for me, capture that wonderful start of summer when you hear skylarks, you know, and they really get going. It's a beautiful sound.
Becky Spate, in 2021, the RSPB celebrated the centenary of the Plumage Prohibition Act. Tell me a little bit about that.
So the Plumage Act was the first really successful campaign of the RSPB, which had been founded by three women. And it was all about the threat of extinction really being caused by this enormous fashion trade. Huge feathers and whole birds that would be pinned to these big picture hats that were very fashionable at the time right around the world. And they came together to start the RSPB, and really their first campaign, which took a long time, was to get the Plumage Act through.
And of course, there's an enormous amount of land, many reserves geographically spread across the UK, which the RSPB are involved in.
Yes, we own or manage 160,000 hectares of land around the UK. And those really range from, just last week I was at Bempton Cliffs, which is in East Yorkshire, and that has amazing views of gannets in particular at the moment, one of my favourite birds, as they nest on the cliffs. We've just heard that BBC Springwatch is going to come from RSPB Arn, which is down in Dorset, where I'm from originally, and that's a coastal reserve. Our biggest reserve is actually up in Scotland, Forsenarve Flow, which is an amazing area of peatland, which we're now restoring because of obviously its importance as a habitat, but also for carbon too.
What kind of birds might you meet there?
So up in the peat country, you're going to get waders, things like redshank, things like plovers too, all those birds that love that kind of boggy environment.
Well, music now that relates very much to your hometown, Becky, of Nottingham.
Yes. So I have lived in Nottingham for almost 20 years. This is a piece of music which I love anyway, but the thing that's significant about it is who's playing it. And it's somebody who lives just round the corner from me in Nottingham and whose family, I think, have transformed classical music.
It's the Carne Mason family, isn't
yes.
it? And, of course, the cellist is Shekou. Playing here the Adagio from the Elgar Cello Concerto in E minor, conducted by Simon Rattle.
Thank you.
The Adagio from the Elgar Cello Concerto, played by Sheku Kane Mason with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Simon Rattle. Very nice to hear someone other than Jacqueline Dupré playing. Wonderful though she is,
yes.
Nice to hear a young artist.
Yes. During lockdown, I've got a very good friend who turned 100, who lives just along the road from me, and she loves music. You know, she's always gone to the concert hall in Nottingham and was a member of the music club. And I stuck a note through the Kane Mason's door and said, would Sheku play something for her, thinking his career was really taking off at that time. And I thought, this is not going to happen. And he sent the most lovely video for her of him playing a beautiful piece of Bach. And she adored it and sent him a video back. So they kind of started a video correspondence. But just such a lovely family. And I've been to see his sister play in the concert hall, and the whole family comes to support, and they get into their van and go back up the hill at the end. And it's just opening up new audiences for classical music.
There are lots of negative stories, Becky Speight, about the state of wildlife here in the UK. Can you make us feel a bit of optimism about things that are making a difference?
Yes, it's that fierce optimism, really, that I talked about at the start. We know what we need to do in terms of having more habitat available for wildlife in better condition. We know what makes a difference in terms of individual species. If you look at something like the bittern, for example, the bittern is actually coming back because we're getting the kind of reed beds in place that we'd lost. One of the things I really worry about is what's going on in terms of intensive farming, for example. Pesticides, our use of fertilisers, we know these are driving declines. But we also know there are farmers out there who are farming with nature, really successfully producing food, but also a thriving natural world.
Well, if I could make a little analogy here between the sparrow and the common man. I live on a farm, and quite often we spill grain or store grain. And the huge number of sparrows that now come every day to that lane.
Yes.
Just shows what can be done.
Yeah. And this is the point about abundance. I mean, sparrows always come top for years in the big garden bird watch because everyone sees lots of sparrows. But there are no sparrows around me in Nottingham now. There are very few sparrows in London. You know, they are declining, and we just have to get the conditions right so that they can thrive alongside us.
I'll have to lend you a sack of corn. Avian flu has been much in the news. How much of a threat is that to wild birds?
Oh, it's been devastating for certain populations. In particular, our geese have really suffered, and some of our seabirds, so gannets. Some of those devastating scenes from colonies like Bass Rock up in Scotland were just horrific to see last year. And we're kind of on tenterhooks waiting to see what will happen this year to those colonies. There is a glimmer of hope in that there's been some research done very recently which has shown that some gannets, rather than having kind of two blue eyes now, some gannets have one black coloured eye and one blue eye. This is linked to having survived bird flu. We need to find out more about it, but it may show a little bit of immunity developing. But you know, bird flu's been around for years, but this highly pathogenic, really devastating version of it came out of intensive bird rearing in the world's food systems and has come into wild birds, and now wild birds are spreading it back, of course, into poultry systems, and just shows what happens when we push the natural world too far.
Well, gannets, of course, are seabirds, and it is Vaughan Williams' Sea Symphony that you've turned to next. The third movement, The Waves, what was it that made you think, this is what I'm going to go for now?
I sang this. I was a member of the Nottingham Harmonic quite a number of years, and this was the first piece I sang with them, and I really enjoyed getting into a big chorus.
Especially with that opening, Behold the Sea.
I mean, it's absolutely redolent of my childhood and kind of coming over the last hill and kind of seeing the sea. And I find Vaughan Williams fascinating, partly because he kind of took so much from folk music, which of course I love as well. And because, of course, he was very progressive. He thought music should be for everyone.
Well, it's The Waves, the third movement you've homed in on.
Yes, that sense of the sea and the ocean as a whole world that can kind of open up before you.
Thank you.
music from A Sea Symphony by Ralph Vaughan Williams, The Waves, performed by the Hallé Choir and Orchestra, conducted by Mark Elder. Becky Speight, your final piece of music actually takes us to Scotland, which I think has a special place in your heart.
Yes, I lived in Scotland for 5 years. And when I was due to leave Scotland and move back down to London for work, I took myself on a trip right around the edge of Scotland. And one of the places I went to was Orkney. And it's a wonderful country, Scotland. And of course, wildlife hanging on well on those edges.
Peter Maxwell Davies wrote a piece, Farewell to Stromness, which has become incredibly popular. But it is a kind of protest as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it was written in the 70s and it was all about the threat of a uranium mine being developed. He wrote this series of pieces of music called The Yellow Cake Review because the yellow cake was the uranium. It's for the piano and the voice. It includes kind of interviews for nuclear jobs and things. But it was a protest, basically, to say we don't want this.
I must tell you a funny, if somewhat sad, story.
Yes.
About Max.
Yeah.
There was a swan that flew into pylons.
There was.
And Max, not wanting to waste anything, ate it. But of course, he was master of the Queen's music. So technically, he should not have been eating something that was the property of Her Majesty the Queen.
There's a newspaper article where the RSPB are quoted for their view on this and say, actually, Max is hugely supportive of all sorts of wildlife and kind of stick up for him.
Well, let's think of him and his swan as we hear Farewell to Stromness, composed and performed by Peter Maxwell Davies, and it's farewell to you, and thank you very much, Becky Speight.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Farewell to Stromness, composed and performed by Peter Maxwell Davis. It was the final choice of Michael Barclay's guest today, the chief executive of the RSPB, Becky Speight. Private Passions was produced by Claire Walker. Next week, Michael's guest will be the writer Naomi Alderman. BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio, BBC Sounds, and on most smart speakers. Just ask for BBC Radio 3. It's 1 o'clock and time for the news, read by me, Jane Royce. The Energy Secretary, Grant Shapps, has dismissed suggestions of a witch hunt against Boris Johnson after the former Prime Minister resigned as an MP. Mr Johnson stood down on Friday over an investigation into whether he misled MPs about lockdown parties during the pandemic. Mr Shapps said the Conservative Party didn't miss the drama of Mr Johnson's stint as Prime Minister. Three British tourists are reported to be missing and 12 others have been rescued after a fire erupted on a boat in the Egyptian Red Sea resort of Marsa Alam. Local authorities said the boat had been on a sea cruise and the fire had been caused by an electrical fault. The Scottish First Minister, Hamza Youssef, has said the SNP would be willing to do a deal with the Labour Party if the next general election resulted in a hung parliament. Mr Youssef told the BBC the price of any deal to support a Labour-led government would be a second referendum on Scottish independence. Labour has repeatedly said it would not do a deal with the SNP. Fighting is continuing in southern and eastern Ukraine as Kyiv's forces try to recapture territory occupied by Russian troops. Military analysts say Ukraine is fighting on at least four fronts in the regions of Luhansk, Donetsk and Zaporizhia. Separately, Russia's defence ministry is claiming that Ukraine has made an unsuccessful attempt to attack part of its Black Sea fleet. There's been no word from Kyiv. The four indigenous children who survived more than 5 weeks alone in the Colombian jungle after their plane crashed have been reunited with their relatives. Their mother and two pilots died in the crash and they spent 40 days fending for themselves in the Amazon before they were rescued. Rescuers tracked the children down after spotting signs in the jungle, including footprints and the remains of eaten fruit. Manchester City fans have been celebrating their club's European Champions League victory. Pep Guardiola's side beat Inter Milan 1-0 in Istanbul, securing a treble of trophies in one season. After winning the Premier League and FA Cup, City became only the second English club to achieve the triple trophy haul, matching Manchester United's treble in 1999. And the weather. The Met Office has issued yellow weather warnings for rain and thunderstorms as a plume of warm air is expected to raise temperatures up to 30 degrees Celsius in some areas. BBC News.
On BBC Radio 3, an exclusive broadcast in the presence of His Majesty the King. Recorded on Tuesday night in the beautiful surroundings of St James's Spanish Place in London. And celebrating the master of the King's music, Judith Weir.